When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. The Mark Reardon Show.
He's a bully with $17 million in a security detail.
Quit the tough guy act. You know where to find me. Any place, cowboy.
It's common sense. You know, some things are law, and I'm all in favor of it. And some things are common sense.
And I heard a boom! In my whole house,
show. This is the Reardon Roundtable.
All right, well, let's see if we can execute a show here today a little bit more challenging. Hi, Sue Thomas, how are you?
Doing great, thank you. Beautiful day.
We are perfectly timed, by the way. You know who is set up already, even before any of this happened with CrowdStrike, is our friend CrowdStrike, George Rosenthal from Thrall. That was already scheduled. So he's going to be here in the 5 o'clock hour. And truth be told, everything that happened across the planet did affect 97.1 FM Talk and some of the Odyssey stations here, and the technical capabilities have been shut down for hours. We think we're back up and running as well as we can be for 3:08 on this Friday afternoon. Let me introduce the panel this afternoon. Jane Duker is back with us after a week off. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing good. What is it, 17, 18 days? Are we about done with this primary
season?
About
18 days, I think,
yeah,
is
I think
what
it's
we're
18
looking
days,
at right now.
Ladies
gonna,
and germs.
We're going to talk about all of that. We have former State Senator Jeff Smith in the room with us this afternoon. Jeff, how are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
You weren't late today. What happened?
I wasn't really working. I was coaching basketball
camp. Okay, that's
today,
why.
So.
Greg Keller is here as well, Republican consultant, the founder of Atlas Strategy Group. Greg, how are you?
Thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, this is going to be a good one. We've got a lot to talk about. Let me start with my buddy Scott Jennings on CNN last night, just kind of reflecting on the speech, the convention.
Yeah, this convention is energized. They are unified. They are defiant in some ways. They're optimistic. It's the first time we've been ahead since in the July of a presidential since the year 2000. It's been 24 years. And let me tell you something else. I've been saying this, Van and Axe know, this is a vibes election. We're always doing a vibe check. And let me just reassure the American people, one of our two major political parties is functioning properly. It's the Republican Party, and the vibes on the floor here are simply outrageous, and we're about to have a hell of a lot of fun because Hulkamania is about to run wild in Milwaukee. Anderson Cooper, what are you going to do with the largest arms in the world?
So they were having fun with that last night, but look, it was, Greg, I'm going to start with you here. I thought it was an extremely well-choreographed convention. I gave a lot of credit to the RNC, whoever was kind of pushing the buttons on putting this together. Now, I will say this. I think Trump is still on stage in Milwaukee this afternoon delivering that speech. It did run a little long in the tooth for me, but reactions from this week in Milwaukee, Greg?
I mean, I would just listen to what the Democrat people on that CNN panel said themselves. Van Jones, Frank Luntz, and others were saying that this was an absolute home run of a convention. I agree with you. I think it was perfectly scripted. You spoke, Mark, a little bit about about Trump having gone on a little bit too long. I think what people are going to remember about that particular speech was the Democrat reaction to it. And the Democrat reaction to President Trump's speech yesterday, or last night, rather, was basically to make fun of him for commemorating a fireman and a father who was shot while protecting his family in the assassination attempt that just occurred. Democrats are covering themselves in shame by trying to make fun of that in light of that. It was a tremendous, huge success the entire convention. I thought it went great. And we'll see how the Democrats do in another month or so with a candidate who can't string half a sentence together.
Jane, outside of the substance, and you can certainly address the substance, but I don't know that you could disagree that you had a vibe like Jennings was saying. Look, I haven't had that vibe at an RNC for a while. Didn't really support what was happening in 2016. I was concerned in 2020, and you had kind of a hodgepodge of speakers. Look, I'm fine with Dean Cain. All right, Dean Cain's fine as a little pundit, but we don't need, you know, former washed up actors to be taken over the convention, and sometimes you get a little goofiness like that, but I didn't think that happened this year, so it got people revved up.
Except that Guilfoyle woman. She needs to just stop.
I didn't see her.
Yeah, she was like, oh, yeah, when they stormed Normandy, they were trying to, you know, get rid of communism. And I'm like, you don't even know your history.
Okay,
so
I did not see
so
that.
So she
one.
Needs to just, like, be benched. She's ridiculous. Other than that, I mean, I think it went fine. Frankly, I liked Attorney General Schmidt's speech. I'm glad somebody got up and said we're going to, like, actually, you know, quit beating up police, and that, you know, controlling crime in this country is something we actually need to do. We don't need to just change the statistics. We need to actually work on crime. So I was very happy that, and I was actually proud that the senator from Missouri addressed crime on a national platform. So I was happy about that. That's for me, you know. For my, but other than that, I mean, it's a great rah-rah speech. And if they can keep him, you know, from being himself, then yeah, I think that will absolutely help him. I mean, this is good timing. What's sad is the cycle, the TV cycle is so fast that all it takes one thing and the dynamic moves. So, you know.
Well, look where we were a week ago. I was sitting here with a different panel a week ago, and we were really kind of talking, and we thought Biden was going to get out. There were a lot of stumbles. We know what was happening.
Yeah.
And then Saturday happens, and then and we'll get to whether or not he's going to stay in a second, Jeff, but just your reaction from, you know, Jane's point is a good one. The news cycle is really changing, but there is a lot of unification that just didn't exist there. And I think, obviously, some of what happened last Saturday plays into that. Now, if it affects the election, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I take a little issue with what my friend Greg said. And
go
that,
figure.
That's never happened. I do think it was a decent convention. I think the first 3 days actually went off rather smoothly. And Republicans have done a good job of hiding some of their most unpopular elements, whether that's people like Marjorie Taylor Greene, you know, or, you know, Lauren Boebert, you know, some of the loudest and most vocal members of Congress, or some of the policies that are extremely unpopular, such as a federal ban on abortion, you know, which is like a 20% position nationally. And Trump distanced himself from that by pulling that
very
out
much
of the platform.
So, right?
Those things were good. The only problem came when the actual nominee got on stage. And I think what people are going to remember is that they didn't have to use their sleep aid last night because they just tuned into the speech and fell asleep in 10 minutes.
The first part of the speech was pretty good.
So that's my point is, like, it was a huge missed opportunity, because if he would have gotten up there and given a 12-minute speech saying, you know, I was totally humbled by what happened, and I'm so grateful to the people who literally took a bullet from me. And, you know, by the grace of God, I'm here before you tonight. And you don't know me as the most devout person, but my God, after what I experienced, I come away a different person. And I am going to serve you in a way that you know, you've never seen me do before.
I've grown.
Instead, he did that for 10 minutes and then bragged for 80 minutes and was the old Trump. And I think he lost a lot of people. He lost an opportunity to actually turn some of the people who were feeling a little bit of sympathy towards him in the past week.
I think the speech, I don't disagree with that. I mean, I think the speech could have been better, could have been more concise.
Could have been a lot worse.
But it's Trump. It could have been a lot worse, but it's Trump, right? And I don't know that was going to shift a lot of independents anyway. Where does the convention, before we get to Biden, where does the convention at this point, let's talk about some other things. J.D. Vance, your thoughts on J.D. Vance. I was kind of rooting for Youngkin, maybe Rubio, but it completely makes sense. I'm excited about it. He's young, got a promising future, smart, beautiful wife who's equally as smart. So what did you think of that, Keller?
I thought Vance made a lot of sense as a choice. When I look at vice presidential choices, and I think we know that we are past the point in American electoral politics where you're going to win a state based on whether or not you choose any one VP candidate. I think the primary thing that you're looking for at this point is ideological and cultural continuity with the president, with the person who's running for president. That's why Al Gore, who is psychotic, but was such a brilliant choice for Bill Clinton at the time, because that election was all about youth. It was about Southern Democrats. It was about a new generation.
It was about hope.
It was about hope. And I think what Trump is doing is he is choosing someone who believes in his overall agenda. J.D. Vance, brilliant guy, Yale Law School. To your point, brilliant wife. Got some Hollywood star power, young, attractive,
likable,
and just a really good person. I know him a little bit. He's a fantastic person. He's every bit as good in person as he is on his resume. I thought it was a pretty good choice. You know, the libertarians in our party sometimes don't like it, but I thought it was a tremendous choice. And I think he really, the number one rule with choosing a vice president is don't make an unforced error, and he avoided doing that.
Well, I'm more libertarian, and I'm fine with the pick moving forward. I will say, Jane, you probably know this, a little history made there this week. First presidential ticket that will feature facial hair since Thomas Dewey. Thomas Dewey. So there you go.
I mean, the interesting thing is how they've just whitewashed that this guy called Trump a Nazi. I mean,
he said he's our Hitler.
He's our Hitler.
In 2016.
Yeah, I mean,
so if you're looking for,
look, there are a lot of things that a lot of people said. Well, I think Greg will also affirm this, that there were a lot of us that didn't like a lot of the things that were going on. Now, I never became a never Trumper like those kooks, and they've been pretty quiet right now. Yeah, he's changed his tune. He and there's no doubt you have people in your party that have done the same thing, and that sometimes comes back to haunt you. But there's no doubt there's been an evolution with J.D. Vance. Trump, I'm sure, was aware of what he said in 2016, and he still picked him.
Well, and he had an opportunity to actually turn that into a positive, and he didn't. He should have said, you know, I am not afraid of people who may have been my detractors. They can be in my inner circle. I am not afraid of dissension. He just can't be a bigger person.
Maybe a missed opportunity there. I get what you're saying.
He could have said, wow, I turned this guy around. And the reason, the way I did that, and I want to do that with all of America. And he's just not capable of doing that. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I thought actually, both with Trump and Vance, they both missed a little bit of an opportunity, you know, in the way that Jane just said regarding Trump. And Vance, I thought, could have insulated himself against the inevitable weeks of attacks about, you know, you called him Hitler, by saying, look, when Donald Trump first came on the scene, here's what concerned me. And here's how
it changed.
You know,
why?
Here's how my mind evolved on that. You know, I think that's usually a good kind of a disarming technique if you take that. I also thought he could have done a little more to kind of talk about his own narrative. He does have a pretty great story.
Yeah.
And instead, because of the narcissist that Donald Trump is, he was probably forced to spend, you know, 10, 12 minutes of that speech doing the hero worship on Trump instead of kind of really helping the American people get to know him. As a young guy with only 1.5 years of elective experience, especially since, you know, they're going after Kamala for being inexperienced, and if she becomes the nominee, that'll be a big kind of attack. I thought he could have done a little better job to kind of really talk about how his experience in the business world or whatever qualifies him for this office.
Jeff mentioned Kamala. I think it's interesting to see them get upset about JD.
I like how you mispronounced that on purpose. You guys are pretty good at that.
Kamala.
I never know which way it is, really. Kamala. Is that okay?
Is she a Jer? I'm trying to keep up. I think it's interesting that they're getting the vapors about Vance having once been somewhat against Trump, when Kamala basically called the sitting president of the United States everything but a slave owner when she was running against president of the United States. I don't recall all that carping from them. It's almost like it's selective or something.
Did you have, I'll tell you who I liked last night, and I don't know that this would be universal. I thought Eric Trump did a great speech. Keller, you agree or disagree?
Didn't see it.
Oh, okay. All right. Did anyone see Eric Trump? I thought that was like, there were things in the content of his speech that I thought should have been in Trump's speech. But we'll come back. We have not talked about the scenario of Joe Biden leaving the race and also the aftermath of the assassination attempt. We got a lot to get to here on the Reardon Roundtable on a Friday. Hang in there. Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. The panel has been on fire already. Jane Duker, Republican consultant Greg Keller, former state senator Jeff Smith. As we get into the second segment here this afternoon, Sue Thomas will be here with Sue's News after 4 o'clock. We got Paul Hall and Entertainment and Cusimano this afternoon as well. Also in the 5 o'clock hour, Andrew Bailey will be here running for and is the current attorney general. And then we'll get into the CrowdStrike situation with George Rosenthal from ThrottleNet a little bit later in the show. Jeff Smith, let me start with you here. Was this all staged, this assassination attempt, and Trump somehow hired someone to take out a part of his ear? And we haven't seen, you know, a doctor's report or anything like that. I'm very suspicious, as are the kooks in your party. So what would you say about that?
I mean, it's almost but not quite as stupid as the people who said Pelosi wanted people to come in and rush the Capitol on January 6th. So not quite that dumb, but it's close.
Well, it is close. Okay. I'm not a fan of any of that. I'm really not. Yeah. But it is stupid.
And they made jokes about it. And now they're sensitive.
Stupidity on both sides.
Right. Did they do that on Fox?
I think one thing that does kind of separate kind of where the leadership of the two parties is right now is that within a few hours of the tragedy of the other gentleman passing and the near tragedy.
Corey Compitour. Yes, the pronunciation of his name has changed in the last couple of days. I think it's Compitour. We were saying originally Compitouri.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously horrendous tragedy there. But you saw Democratic leaders all over the country immediately saying, you know, horrible tragedy. And thank God, President Trump, former President Trump, is okay. And we wish him a speedy recovery, you know, because it was unknown how injured he was.
Sure.
You saw the blood all over his face, but we still don't have a great sense of exactly, you know, his condition. Conversely, when Nancy Pelosi's husband was nearly bludgeoned to death, you know, you saw
they made jokes.
Former President Trump laughing about it and suggesting that, you know, without any evidence that he was there on some sexual misadventure.
Right.
And that's how he got harmed. So there's just a level of maturity and civility that you see from Democratic leaders in these situations
Keller can't help himself.
In President Trump. And really, that's what could get him over the top.
Okay.
He could win this election if he could show a little bit of empathy, a little bit of humility, and he can't do it.
Hang on, Greg. Hold your thoughts. But Jeff, were there, I mean, you've got people that ordinarily might be considered smart, like a former RNC chair, Michael Steele, and the crew on MSNBC, Joy Reid. They legit think that this was staged by Trump. Now, we got people on our side thinking it was an inside job. I'm not on that camp either.
Michael's a friend of mine. Did Michael really say that?
He did.
Okay,
I can play the audio.
I'm
stunned by it.
That would be disappointing because that's crackpot stuff for anybody to say anything like that. No one would stage something where they're like a quarter inch from instantly dying.
Right.
It's
asinine. Well, the problem is you're sane. Greg, go ahead.
Well, it's funny to hear Jeff say that this is some sort of fringe belief when, in fact, polling out this week shows that a full
34%.
34% of Democrat primary voters believe that this was all a hoax.
Because, how many Republicans think the election was stolen?
So one in three.
Which two out of three Republicans
three.
Believe in the big lie from the 2020 election? So
one in
we're
three,
only half as crazy
one
as
one in three Democrats believe that this was all a hoax and that Trump decided to shoot himself in the face to better his political situation. It's hilarious to see Jeff talk about the maturity of the modern Democrat Party. Like, my brain is about to explode from that. You guys are just a week away from preventing all Jewish students from getting on the WashU campus and burning down every city in America over the last three summers. The way we got to this point, thanks to the magnanimous, highly mature, modern Democrat Party, is that you guys called Donald Trump a Nazi and a threat to democracy for the last 6 years. That's how we got here. And now all of a sudden, by the way, if he's a Nazi and he's a threat to democracy, which is literally the entire raison d'etre of what you guys are running on this year, then why be sad that he didn't get shot? He's Hitler. You should be. You should wish he had gotten shot.
Well, many of them.
If you guys believe what you say.
Many of them do.
Oh, that's right. You guys don't believe what you say.
For those of you out there who are wondering about the voice of this arbiter of maturity, just go to @rgregkeller on X.
Yes.
And you can see the maturity every day out there in his.
If he gets mature, I'm going to be mad.
No, that's clearly not in the cards. Don't worry.
Yeah, he is my, you know, there's a significant amount of entertainment there that I will not be deprived of.
Thank you, Jane.
So, but no, I mean, look, this idea that, I mean, words matter. We all need to grow up and say it. We all need to change the rhetoric a little bit. And, you know, now we're seeing it on both sides. OK, it was inappropriate what happened on January 6th. It was completely people died in January 6th and people died at this shooting. OK,
I strongly condemned what happened on January 6th.
Absolutely.
And I've never wavered from that.
And to your credit, you asked Josh Hawley about that.
Right. And he hasn't spoken with me since.
Yeah.
So,
you know. But I mean, you know, both sides need to say, we have fringe in our party that need to stop.
Okay, that's fair. But here's a question for you, and I don't know if you guys are the best. Well, maybe Smith's the best guy to ask this to. So let me ask you, this threat to democracy thing. Like, what is the threat to democracy? Explain what Joy Reid is worried about.
Denying the election results and saying that I will do it again if I lose.
Yeah, I mean, the threat to democracy was a two-month-long conspiracy that included dozens of people from six swing states to recruit them to serve as fake electors.
But we're going to win this time, so it doesn't matter. We're not going to have to do that now.
Slates
You
to
hope.
Then that were presented, attempting to present them to the vice president to get him to basically throw the election to the House where Republicans could have won.
And he didn't do it.
Thereby overturning a Democratic election. Thank God for the backbone of Vice President Pence not to do that.
Hang
so
Mike Pence.
Having Donald Trump exalt the people who participated in the riot on January 6th, refer to them as quote unquote hostages and get others to do that. That tells me that we should fear for his fundamental belief in the rule of law and elections as the mechanism for the peaceful transfer of power in our country.
This would be pretty hilarious if you guys weren't trying to totally get rid of the 15 million votes that Joe Biden has won in 44 states and territories and overthrowing him as your presidential nominee via a cabal of Hollywood liberal donors, super delegates, and people who run your party. Talk about a threat to democracy.
I'm so glad you guys are here today.
Talk about a threat to democracy.
It
you guys are literally trying. You guys are literally trying to subvert democracy in your own primary right now and letting the rich people lord it over the millions of people who voted for
He's
Biden.
He's not wrong about
Jeff. The disingenuousness of this is hilarious.
Oh,
you guys are out there saying for months, this guy is incapacitated.
Right. Now
this guy,
yeah, right.
We should 25th
Amendment.
We were
telling the truth and you were lying.
And then after the debate, the Democrats are like, oh my gosh, like now we've seen up close and personal, like he may not have it for four more years and we should be concerned about this. And then you guys all of a sudden are saying we're committing a coup by rethinking.
By the way,
he's not the nominee. He is not the nominee yet. We haven't had a convention yet.
Talk about disingenuous. You see the president of the United States. You see the president of the United States on TV every single day. We have been saying for years that this man is falling behind.
We have.
Everyone knows it.
And Chuck Todd knew it.
You guys knew it. The only thing that's changed is that now he's going to lose and you guys are willing to throw him under the bus. That's the only thing that's changed.
I agree with Greg.
Well, I remember the last time you called a red wave and it didn't happen. I think you guys are counting your chickens.
You're
counting your chickens and you don't know.
I would say this because I use this as some cautionary tales this week. A lot of us were tempted. I said it to several people on Saturday in the aftermath because it's easy to do this knee-jerk. I said, game over. This election's over.
I would never say that.
Well,
it's
look,
not.
Jane, I do not believe it's over. And I do believe, Greg, and I think you'd agree with me, that if they think Trump's going to win this thing, they will pull out every stop they can to make sure that that doesn't happen. I'm not a fan of the fake electors. Slate Smith, you know that.
That's good.
And I don't like everything that's gone on around Trump. But at this point, I think that there's enough that's surrounding your party that's questionable that maybe the scales are balanced there with the nonsense that goes on behind both
we
sides.
All got
to his point, you guys, that's fine, but you guys did know. You've known this guy's like this because you guys have been in this room and you've agreed with me.
In November of 22, I came on your show and I said, hey, we just had a pretty historic election result when typically midterms are horrible for the party of the
there
president.
There was no red wave.
No, and I agree. We overestimated
tsunami,
that.
The red tsunami that people are talking about, it didn't happen. And I said, what a wonderful time this would be for Joe Biden to say, you know, I helped save democracy for this country by beating Trump. And we had a historic victory in the midterm. And we just passed a flurry of legislation in summer of 22. And I'm going to go out on top. That's what I said I thought he should do then. And I think
he did say that.
And I haven't changed my opinion in 18 months. He said when he campaigned, he would be a bridge to the next generation of Democrats. It's not too late for him to do
that. All right,
so
what's going to happen? What's the prediction? Is he going to get out this weekend?
My
the reporting yesterday was he might not make it through Sunday, but a lot of that, I think, was fluffed up.
Yeah, I think that he would have been out by earlier this week had the tragedy of last Saturday
you do.
Not happened.
Just because of the way last week
well,
ended.
Because he was on a call with the new
Saturday
Democratic
afternoon.
Coalition on Saturday afternoon.
Right.
And apparently was horrendous, was confrontational, and his belligerence had caused a few dozen of them to basically say, hey, we're going to call for his resignation.
And then the assassination
happened. Happened. That stopped everything. I think we're seeing the momentum rebuild. And what I think is happening, what I kind of know is happening from some, you know, donor types around the country that I talk to is they're cutting off the money. Okay. So they are slowly kind of asphyxiating his campaign. And the burn rate for these presidential campaigns, like at this point, they're spending tens of millions of dollars, you know, each month. And if they don't have tens of millions of dollars coming in the door, then they can't keep the lights on. And his fundraising for the last 3 weeks has been about a quarter of what was projected. And I think if he's got people who will tell him that, and that's the big if, will his inner circle, which is basically his family and a few advisors who've been with him for decades. Will they tell him the truth about the dire state of his fundraising and tell him that you may not have the fuel to get to the end of
it? At a certain point, don't they have to?
Here's the thing, then he'll get out. This is where I disagree with Jeff on that. Are you telling me these Democrats, or if Biden refuses to get out, oh, they're just going to bail and let Trump get in?
No.
I mean, they're not. So, I mean, look, I think it comes down to whether this man chooses to do it. And I have not seen anything to indicate that he is going to do this. Now, I know a lot of people are talking, but, you know, time is running short, guys. I mean, this idea that you could just put in a new face and expect, like, this to work, you know, by November, I think it's crazy.
But I think it is, too. But the new face would have to be Kamala, because you're not going to pass her over.
I mean,
I know some people in the party are suggesting that. But, Jeff, do you see a scenario where he gets out and she's not the nominee? It's certainly possible, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a scenario. She's the front runner. But I don't think it's a fait accompli.
Somebody's going to have to negotiate it. But if she's not on the ticket.
Biden felt a lot of confidence in her ability to win, I don't think we'd be in this situation. And so since I think there's been some apprehension on his part about her electoral viability, he may not be so quick to say everyone needs to support her. So
that's the other thing. There has to be some sort of consensus or this is not going to happen. And if Joe Biden is kicking his feet, I think it makes it far more challenging.
So I also think, you know, a lot of the Biden or bust people are, you know, raising these obstacles that I don't really think exist. They're saying, well, what about the money? If you have someone else, they wouldn't be able to use the Biden money. If we have, say, a Gretchen Whitmer, Wes Moore ticket, you know, governor of Michigan, governor of Maryland, there would be an explosion
of money coming in. They couldn't use the money that's in the campaign account right now.
And that would just be sent to a super PAC, like Priorities or one of the big Democrats.
You can do that, though.
Yes, you can send it there. And then they would spend it on behalf of the campaign. They'd get a little bit worse ad rates, but it wouldn't be a huge difference. Okay,
it's doable.
Okay, so that part is doable. And the people saying, well, what about the ballots? You know, No one has printed up any ballots. Here's my question.
Wait a second. That's fine. Let's take that.
No,
what about African Americans? Okay, let's ask that. What about African Americans? What did they take from that?
I think it's a legitimate question. And here would be kind of my honest analysis. In late 2019, when Kamala Harris was on the verge of dropping out of the presidential race, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, we can't nominate Pete Buttigieg because he has no black support. But he actually had the same percentage of black support as Deval Patrick, the governor of Massachusetts, black man, another black man, Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, and Kamala Harris, also black. The black candidates were all polling around 2% among black voters because Joe Biden was dominating them. So I don't think, and yes, I think she has consolidated some black support as vice president, but if Gretchen Whitmer were the nominee or Josh Shapiro, I think their vice presidential pick would probably be a black person. We have a larger bench of possibilities than we did then, if you look at someone like Wes Moore, the governor of Maryland. And so I don't think that it automatically means we're sacrificing the black vote. A, because she was never overwhelmingly popular among black voters, and B, because it's likely that we'll have a black person on the ticket either way.
Well, what I may disagree with on that is I think black voters right now want Joe Biden. I mean, I think there is a lot of consensus among African Americans.
Really?
To not leave. Oh, look. I mean, look.
Why?
Because.
Absolutely. Why? If you look at the polling, the two groups of people who want Joe Biden to remain in, besides just, you know, a sizable portion of the grassroots generally, are black voters and senior voters.
Yep.
So it's their number one most important constituency that they need to win 90-10 to even be in the ballgame. And number two, the most reliable large group. More to say on this, but if they do not have a black person at the top of the ticket, they're going to lose 40 states.
Hang on. We got one more segment to go. It's a Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Oh, it's the Reardon Roundtable. of Fired Up Room, Greg Keller, always on fire. Good thing he's here today. Republican consultant, founder of the Atlas Strategy Group. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is here, and our friend Jane Duker. And Jane, let me start with you. Let's get into a little bit of local news, and we can handicap just the last couple of weeks of our primary here in St. Louis, although we're running out, or in Missouri, we're running out of time. But there was an interesting court ruling today. You're telling me that if you live in St. Louis, you were depending on the $500 a month stipend from the city. That's on hold now?
Yes. A judge, a circuit judge in the city of St. Louis ruled that it is likely that it violates Missouri's constitutional provision that prevents the city from spending money on, you know, giving money basically to individuals. You have to spend money for adequate consideration and efficient service to the city. So basically, it, you know, you just can't hand money out to individuals. It's, it, you know, it's supposed to be for the good of everyone and not directed at certain individuals. And so this was going to be a $500 check written for a year and a half to a certain number of people that they pick. I mean, it's completely not random, but it's, you know, it's subjective. There's not a whole lot of standards. And this is the part that's really bad. There is zero standards on how they can spend the money. So they wanted to go out and buy crack. They can do that. So that, I think, is where the program really fails, because you're just handing somebody a check and there is absolutely, I mean, name one other program, you know, in any governmental entity that allows money to just, you know, you could throw it out the window if you want.
I don't know why you hate poor people, Jane, but I understand your point. How about, this is a speed round here. St. Louis City Public Schools has hired a new influencer, but it's a new communications director who proudly announced that she's going to split time between here and Texas. Is she gone already?
Yeah, they already have reconsidered.
Wait a second. I thought they issued a statement earlier today. I just saw a press release
that, like, praised her. And
I thought
said,
I saw that she got booted.
Okay, I saw a press release that praised her.
Yes, let me check.
And basically said,
it's silly.
You guys misread her, you know, her post. What she really meant is that she's relocating to St. Louis. She's keeping her place back in Houston for her son to commute to, who's at college.
So they're communication.
Except that's not what she said. And this is six-figure position,
very
right?
Yes. No, her post has been taken down. But I mean, she's like, I got like four jobs. I'm awesome.
But I don't think she's gone. I don't think she's gone at this point.
We'll see if Jane can find that.
I'm going to, because I thought I read that, but maybe I'm wrong.
Greg Keller, after the show last week, I got home and I learned this. It was not on the roundtable. I've been suing about this all week. They apparently are going to name a street after Mike Brown that's two blocks away from me. And if this happens in this city, I swear the reaction, Greg, it's embarrassing. How'd you like to be a cop downtown, Jane?
Oh,
or anywhere else when you got Mike Brown Avenue, which is now Market Street? Pop off on that, Keller, because if I do, I'm going to probably get fired because I have so much anger
over
this.
I'd be right behind you.
It's totally psychotic. It's been put forward by Rasheen Aldridge. It's totally laughable and ridiculous. This is where we find the modern Democrat Party today. Let's just remember, Michael Brown robbed a store, assaulted the owner of that store, then assaulted a police officer, attacked him in his car,
and then charged the police officer,
tried to take his gun away from him, got shot in the process. Even Barack Obama's Eric Holder run Department of Justice, which wanted to bend over backwards to say that this guy was innocent, even they said, gave a definitive ruling that this guy was absolutely in the wrong. And now, of course, Democrats want to lionize them because Democrats are psychotic.
Not all Democrats.
Are they going to do this? Smith, are they really going to do this? Do you really think?
They probably have the votes. I mean, that you should all, I mean, this could very well happen. And
Smith,
tell me
this isn't going to happen. Please give me some hope here.
I can't tell you that it's not going to happen.
It's been almost a week since they passed an ordinance attacking police. It's been about a week. So we should have like a little OSHA sign. How many days has it been since city officials have attacked police?
Does she not understand the message that sends?
And she won't veto it. I can guarantee you.
Does she really not get that?
I can just say, and I hate to come on here and agree with anything Greg Keller says, but... But frankly, you've got two kind of good mainstream center-left Democrats, Wesley Bell in the county prosecutor's office, and of course, former President Obama, whose staff both took an exhaustive look at what happened that day. And so I think to do this would certainly probably not be a good political move.
It would be horribly divisive. First of all, it didn't even happen in the city of St. Louis.
Exactly.
So
I mean, if you're
going to
do that in Ferguson, do it in Ferguson. Right. But I mean,
that's a different 10-year. This is the protester. This is the nonprofit industrial complex that is, you know, surrounding all of everything that happened here and the unrest that happened here so that they can remain relevant, because they lack, this is the problem. These people lack no other identity. And that's a problem, because you can't let go. If we're making progress, they still will not let go.
I don't want to root against the city of St. Louis, because we do have good things happening. But if this happens, anything that happens in this city, they deserve it. And I will have no empathy, and neither will other people from throughout the area. And I hope that includes a lot of African Americans that are common sense and understand how ridiculous this is.
If I can kind of just summarize my thought on this, it's, you know, it's taken the region a It's a decade after
10 years next month.
It's a decade after Ferguson, you know, nearly.
And they're gonna rub everybody's nose.
There was
nose
a lot of publicity around there frankly, you know, there's no way around saying that if you're an economic development person, that was a difficult challenge to kind of overcome when you're trying to get a company to relocate here, because people just associated the St. Louis region with all the unrest.
Okay.
We're coming out of that, and this might not be the best move.
Then why don't you talk to your BFF, Rasheen, and say, what the hell are you doing, you idiot? Oh, my God.
No, it's unbelievable.
You know, Smith tried to put him on the roundtable one time. We invited him, then he chickened out. Thank God. I don't think that would have been a fit. Keller, great to see you.
You too, buddy.
Thanks for bringing the fire. Jeff, thank you. Jane's going to hang out.
Get more at 971talk.com.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends, surprise parties, camps, birthdays. The same way you plan for the important moments, start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.